Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Feels great. Long overdue for all us as Devin Hester fans, family members. But at the end of the day, you know, when the time's called, that knock at the door comes, it feels like it's the first one. So I'm honored and privileged to be a Hall of Famer now, and just so excited about everything that's going on right now.
A very appreciative Devin Hester, one of the former Bears going into the Hall of Fame today, along with Julius Peppers. And, of course, Steve Mongo McMichael here to talk about all that and more is Jack Silverstein, who is on Twitter at ReadJack, a Chicago sports historian with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, Twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Hello, Jack.
Dan, Lawrence, hello.
And Layla.
Hey, Jack.
Oh, and Layla. Oh, wonderful. Hi, Layla.
Hi, it's good to talk to you. It's good to talk to you. Well, I guess let's just start with what you're familiar with. I know is there a bit of a connection issue? Do we want to see if we can put him on hold?
Yeah, let's put him on hold.
Sorry,
Jack. We can just tighten up that connection a little bit.
Is that the Twitch connection or the Fringe connection?
Well, either way.
I was told it was a series of tubes.
Or insidiously, the Cylons rather than just taking somebody out completely, they may be trying to...
Well, Jack is someone that the Cylons would 100% try and attack.
Oh, I know they would.
Well, they've given us permission to talk to him again, so...
All right, good. So as we were saying, what's the vibe down there, sir?
Yeah, well, I'm actually en route, and that might be why my connection is bad. I had to pull over. But the vibe in Bearsland is super excited. I mean, what a time. We've got the Hall of Fame game. Now the starters aren't going to be playing. We're not going to see Caleb tonight. But the combination of the three Bears going into Canton, the Hall of Fame game, Caleb Williams, Hard Knocks. It's a pretty exciting time to be a Bears fan, and I'm expecting to see a lot of excited Bears fans in just a few hours.
We spent a lot of time in the last segment talking about Hester and Peppers, so why don't we start with you, with Mongo, on why this was a necessary wrong that had been righted with him going into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, the hardest thing with the senior pool and the senior committee is that there are a lot of reasons why people who are worthy of Canton get left out. And it's very hard to work through that. It's a huge backlog, and there are loads and loads of worthy players. For Mongo, I think what happened is that perhaps his personality got in the way of his production. There was also a weird bit that he had three seasons where he had double-figure sacks and was not in the Pro Bowl. So his resume, when you look at it from a modern lens, looks a little weird because you're looking at it going, how was he not getting that recognition at the time? There was also a stat that people weren't really looking at, which was at the time of his retirement, his 95 sacks put him first among all defensive tackles. Now he's a little bit lower now because guys who have come after have passed him, Aaron Donald. And there are guys who were before him, and their stat sacks weren't known. And a couple summers ago, there were some historians who got all the sack totals going back to 1960, so 22 years before it became an official stat. And even with all that, Mongo's still in the top 10 among defensive tackles. I think another thing that happened was there might have been 85 Bears fatigue. And while the 85 Bears, while Ditka's Bears might have underachieved, the defense did not. And that's a historically great defense, not just in 85, 86, 87, 88. And you're looking at teams that, you know, lost Wilbur Marshall and still was a top defense in 88. A stat that I was able to pull up was that for 11 years, Mongo was out-sacking the average AP defensive tackle. So the all-pro defensive tackles, Mongo was averaging more sacks over 11 years. These are just things that are harder to fish out, and you have to have a little bit more of an appreciation for what he was able to do on that defensive line, on that front. They were able to play him inside. They were able to play him outside. He took on double teams. He did a lot that allowed Hampton and Dent, and Singletary and Wilbur and everybody to have the careers that they had. So it's great that he got this attention. It's great that it happened now. Obviously, we know his health. It's wonderful that it happened now when he is able to celebrate it with his family.
When you mentioned his personality being a bit of a headwind, as much as we celebrated sort of the myth-making of Hampton and McMichael and the Texas biker bars and handling rattlesnakes and all of the stuff that we heard about these guys starting fights just to entertain themselves, what was it that somebody might have found difficult or off-putting when we found out later in his career that he was a Renaissance man, that Mongo could sing and entertain, and it was really just a sweet soul?
Yeah, I think that the stories about him might have just overshadowed his play. And when you think about that defense, you're going to think about Singletary, Wilbur Marshall destroying Joe Ferguson, Hampton, Dent obviously was the Super Bowl MVP. So there's so many personalities, Fridge, that you can get lost in terms of your play. I think another thing that happened maybe with Mongo, you know, he went 20 years of his modern era eligibility, his entire 20 years, without being a semifinalist. And there is a degree of politicking that goes on that Mongo, as far as I can tell, never did and wasn't interested in. He was filling his time in other ways. He was wrestling. He was coaching in Arena League. He was, you know, we remember him singing the seventh inning stretch. There was always something that was going on that was separate from the NFL and mm-hmm. separate from his NFL career. Rick Tellender wrote a column the other day, and he asked Misty McMichael, you know, about the process of getting him in. And she said that she asked Hampton and said, you know, how did you get in so early? And Hampton said, well, I started sending my stats to voters. I don't see any implication that Mongo had his eyes set on the Hall in any sort of proactive public way. And while that shouldn't be something that is necessary, for a lot of guys it is. Unless you're Lawrence Taylor, Jim Brown, Jerry Rice, Walter Payton, thankfully Devin Hester, there are a lot of great players who become judgment calls. And the question is, can you get voters thinking about you? Can you get voters advocating for you? And if you're not advocating for yourself, where does that begin? So that is part of what left Mongo out for so long.
Well, I think also when you mentioned that 85 Bears fatigue, just being a victim of your own success in a way, you don't want to take the shine off of other people. And perhaps that might have also been part of his reasoning for not self-promoting more when he was doing all these other things and finding his fulfillment.
Absolutely, Layla. That is absolutely what I think is part of the case. You know, I also think that perhaps something that helped him was we just saw Tampa Bay get their fourth defender in off of, like the 85 Bears or like the 80s Bears, a one champ team. So you couldn't really sit there and say, all right, well, that's a reason not to have him in. Four defenders from one team. Well, you just did it with Tampa, and the Bears in the 80s were better than statistically and in terms of impact that they had on how defenses are coached and how they're run and how they're drafted. I mean, the Bears were a bigger deal than the Bucks, with all due respect to that Bucks team and Tony Dungy and what they built. The Bears were a bigger deal. So you couldn't really have that as a reason anymore. And there was definitely an urgency. His case definitely picked up after it was announced that he had ALS. But if you go back, there were plenty of people who were talking about Mongo for the Hall before that happened. And I'll just note that the Bears' 100th year celebration in 2019, there were three big 100 Bears lists. There was one the Bears put out. There was the one that the Tribune put out. And there was the one that my guys at Windy City Gridiron put out. And we all had Mongo in the top 25. And we all had him among defensive linemen on the Bears after Atkins, Dent, and Hampton. So it's not as if he just popped up because he had ALS. I think the ALS put an urgency on his case, and I think that's a good thing.
Devin Hester, it's so legendary now, and the Chicago fans are the only people to see it because he was a phenomenon. I don't like that it took this long because I feel like he should have gone in immediately, but he's in, so I'm happy. What's the best case for this? Like, what is it when you go back and look through the numbers and the stories about Devin Hester just seem unreal?
Yeah, Devin Hester, you know, we hear about change the game, and that's usually overused. But Devin Hester did literally change the game. He changed the way that general managers were drafting. We heard the stories about the Cardinals special teams coach getting fired after 06. He changed the way that people coached. He changed, obviously, games themselves. I mean, you think about Super Bowl 41 and the top person who that Colts team was thinking about in a game planning sense was Devin Hester. It wasn't Urlacher. It obviously wasn't Rex. All love to Rex. It wasn't our guy Thomas. It was Devin. He's a returner. And that's the who they focused on and thought, we have to take him out of the game. And it worked. They kick it down to him on the first play. He runs it back. They didn't give him anything to work with after that point. And it worked. So I think about that. You know, you were someone who they game planned for, not just in any game, but in a Super Bowl. I also look at the return touchdown record. He, you know, he famously had 20 return touchdowns that broke his tie with Deion Sanders. But the guys who he had to pass at the end, they all had defensive touchdowns. Deion, Rondé Barber, Rod Woodson. Devin Hester did that with all returns on special teams. He had already blown past all those other records. So they had to make this new record, basically, for him to chase, and he got it. That's a huge deal. The fact that he is undeniably the best punt returner of all time, but he is also one of the greatest kick returners of all time. I always think about, you know, some people call it the Devin Hester rule when they changed the kickoff spot in 2011. You know, Devin wasn't even our full-time kick returner at that point. It was Danielle Manning, but he was still the person in everyone's mind. Cordell Patterson, who's one of my favorite players and has the record for career kick return touchdowns. Devin Hester has more kick return touchdowns than, I'm sorry, he has more punt return touchdowns than Cordell Patterson has punt return yards. So he was doing it in both ways. And I also think when you think about the memory aspect, the fear that he put in people, there's also this element. If you polled every person who cares about the NFL, players, coaches, fans, media members, team employees, and you said, give me the greatest player ever at every position, I think the two people who would have the biggest gaps would be Jerry Rice and Devin Hester. I think you'd still have people who are saying, well, hold on a minute, Brady, Montana, now you're going to have Mahomes coming up. Brady probably still dominates that, but I bet he doesn't dominate it as well as Hester and Jerry Rice. Devin Hester is the undisputed greatest ever at a position that predates the NFL. They've been returning kicks longer than they've been playing the NFL, and he is the undisputed greatest at it. Well, that, to me, seals it.
And when you listen to players talk about him and the anger that players had over Hester not getting in yet, I don't know why that isn't an indication of what he was doing. He was changing the game. That's the whole point of why you deserve this recognition.
100%. But I would remind people that Devin Hester is the first pure returner to make it to Canton. He's also the first pure returner to make it to the semifinalist stage, which is the top 25. And he was in the top 10 in his first year. That, to me, was always going to be the question. Were voters going to hold his specialty against him? And when they put him in the top 10 in his first year, that said, okay, now it's just a question of order, because the semifinalist stage started in 2004. And since then, every player who's been a first ballot semifinalist has either gotten into Canton or is currently on the ballot winding his way through. So once you reach that point, that tells you everything you need to know. Voters also that year, that Hester 2 years ago, when he was first on the ballot, they put him in the semis and they left out Steve Tasker, who was in his final year of eligibility. Now, a lot of people view Steve Tasker as the greatest, you know, coverage, core special teamer ever. And he was a 9-time semifinalist, and the voters left him out and put in Devin as a semifinalist. They moved him up to the finals. And remember, they don't talk. I mean, they talk informally, certainly, but there's no formal discussion among voters until the finalist stage. So that already showed that he had enough respect, enough support, and it was just going to be a question of him winding and weaving his way through these debates. Everybody at that point gets in. I would have loved to have seen Devin be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He certainly earned it. He still set history, made history as a first ballot finalist. The only special teamer ever who was a first ballot finalist was Jan Stenerud. And he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. So anyway, you cut it, Devin's making history, and it's going to be really beautiful to see him go into the Hall.
Jack, in a minute or less, what is Julius Peppers' Bears legacy?
Well, he played on teams that were always in contention. He came in 2010 and really brought a new level of energy, professionalism, excitement to that defense. He started and played in every game of his Bears career. So four seasons, 16 games a year, plus two playoff games. He played in every game, and he was making plays that only he could make. I remember two in particular. One was a batted ball diving interception at the line of scrimmage against Carolina, his first year here. On the line of scrimmage, jumps up, bats the ball, dives, and makes the interception. The other was his final year here in 2013. And I don't remember if it was a fumble recovery or an interception. It was one of those like midpoints, but he makes the play, runs it back for a touchdown. The guy was playing defensive end. They were moving him inside for a speed line to play defensive tackle. And then he went to the Packers and he was playing an outside linebacker in a 3-4. So with the Bears, the versatility, the dominance, just an outstanding player, leader. I'm very happy that he's going in as well.
Thanks, Jack. We appreciate you. Have fun in Canton.
I will. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Layla. Thanks so much.